Okay, welcome to this edition of My Car Guru, the show where you learn something about cars occasionally. I can't promise anything because I really don't know what your level of knowledge is or your level of interest. You know, if you're really interested in something, then you'll typically learn more about it. You'll do what you need to pursue that knowledge. And I have a lot of what I've learned has been just by assimilation. Being around cars and the car business, and also being around my older brother. He was actually, even though he's a cardiologist, he was the car nut in the family, especially at a young age. I am now. I'm official. But he, Wendell Lawson, Dr. Max Wendell Lawson Jr. is his official name. He was the car lover. He was getting Road and Track and Car and Driver magazines and Motor Trend back in the, early 60s. Speaking of 60s, I was going to talk a little bit about the 60s. I hope you young folks don't mind, but I do a lot of living in the past. You know, and it's really in a bad way, I don't think. I celebrate that time, and I have a lot of access to information about my family history and stuff like that and what my dad did and stuff, just because we were in the car business and they kept everything. And now I am deeply interested in uncovering a lot of that information. But anyway, 1966, I was, based on my calculations, I believe I was in either the fifth or the sixth grade. I haven't completed the mathematics yet. But I think I was in the fifth grade. And 66, I always envied the graduating class of 66 because the older guy that lived down the street, you know, a lot of people, neighborhoods were different back then. Some of you baby boomers may remember that when it was actually safe, when you would actually disappear from your mother's arms in the morning and she not see you again until dark time when she was ringing the bell or hollering for you. And that's the way we lived, especially in the summers, you know, not during the school year. But as soon as we got home from school, though, we were out the door playing basketball, riding bikes, creating mischief of all different kinds. But, it was different back then. Neighbors were neighborly. And we actually knew our neighbors. Now, you may know your neighbor, but I know a lot of people who don't even have a clue. They'll live next door to somebody and not have a clue who they are. So times have changed. We can all agree on that. 1966 was a cool year. The guy down the street was named Greg Duval, and he could really jump high. He could touch the rim. So I was impressed with that since I was a basketball player and couldn't even touch the net. But Greg was a graduate of 66, and he went down to the tunnel, which passed underneath our little mountain we lived on, railroad tunnel, and on that tunnel was a big concrete structure, and he painted class of 1966, and he put these two little eyes in the circle of each of the sixes, and I thought that was so cool. He put his initials beside it, I don't know. It's funny how things stick with you like that, but 66 was an interesting year. You know, safety was the key word. Really a thorn in the side of the Detroit automakers. I don't think they cared much about safety, but they were being pushed by a new federal agency called the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. And they didn't want to see any more metal dashes in cars. They wanted to see collapsible steering columns. There's a number of other things. They didn't want to see me riding on the fold-down armrest of my grandfather's Electra 225 either, but I did it anyway. My seatbelt was his right arm. Anyway, inflation grew. Does that sound familiar? 7% so far this year. But inflation grew as President Johnson convinced Congress to appropriate more billions of dollars to feed the unpromising U.S. military effort in Vietnam. So the more dollars they produced, the more inflation went up, even though it was going to fight a war. In China, Chairman Mao was the guy and creating his great cultural revolution. Not too good. The U.S. and Soviet space programs were accelerating with Russia's successful Venus 3 probe of Venus, of course. And then America's manned Gemini missions. I guess that's how you would say it. Some people might say Gemini, but I say Gemini. Summer riots struck inner city Chicago, Cleveland, Atlanta, Brooklyn, Minneapolis, Omaha, and Dayton. Does that not sound familiar as well? Familiar? Anyway, National Guard troops were deployed to shut them down. Meanwhile, black voter registration continued to be violently resisted by a lot of white folk in the South. Many universities instituted a simple pass-fail grading system, a relief to male students who might otherwise have been booted from college and sent to you-know-where, Vietnam. Some of the other things in 1966, Americans shopped for a new invention. It was called freeze-dried coffee. Boy, my dad's mom sure liked that. Sanka. Had to have her Sanka. We also sipped a Metrical and other low-calorie food substitutes. Fashion's latest words was the asexual Carnaby Street look. I'm from Swinging London. Does that ring any bells with anybody? Women and men wore patterned pants. I did that in the early 70s. Flowered shirts and colorful caps. Influential music, Beach Boys, Pet Sounds, and a pair of Beatles yesterday and today, and Revolver. I don't remember that song. But the year's biggest single was the old crooner himself, Frank Sinatra, Strangers in the Night. And other hits were Petula Clark's I Know a Place, Dusty Springfield's You Don't Have to Say You Love Me, and the Rolling Stones. Do you believe that they're still touring? And they were a big deal in 1966. They sang Under My Thumb. Just a few more things. Big movies. Super Agent, or Secret Agent, Our Man Flint. Spies hit TV, too, and The Man from U.N.C.L.E. I love that show. I had a Man from U.N.C.L.E. briefcase that had all kinds of little tricks in it. Get Smart and I Spy. You remember all of those. And Mission Impossible, Batman. Oh, man, I was a big Batman fan. And in sports, the defending World Series champions, Los Angeles Dodgers, were swept in four games by the underdog Baltimore Orioles. And the Green Bay Packers were the top dogs. So what was going on? Well, there was a lot of interesting cars. American Motors Corporation was still around. You know, they were selling Ramblers and Ambassadors and Marlins. The Marlin was kind of a cool-looking, real fastback. It was a kind of an I don't know who stole who what from whom, but the extreme fastback on this Marlin is very reminiscent of what you would see in a maybe the early 70s Mustangs. I don't know if you recall those, but they were very swoopy. 1969 and 70 Mustangs, I think two of the best-looking body styles in the Mustang era, or multiple eras. The 66 that I have on the showroom is a fastback, but not quite as flat or steep as the ones that came later in the early, or in 1971, 72, 73. AMC was relatively successful during this time, but the writing, handwriting was on the wall. You know, they even, some of their prototypes looked an awful lot like a Gremlin. It was several years before they came out with that car, but they were heading that way. Chrysler Corporation was doing better. Their market share was increasing. At that time, now it's not that way now. Of course, Chrysler, you know, their market share is has basically done the same thing that GM and Ford has done, gone down, but still they were in third place of the big three. Their market share was about 16.6% of the markets. Now I believe it's somewhere in the 8% range. They had the 300 series. They were coming out with the biggest V8 engine on the market. It was a 440 cubic inch. You may remember that. It debuted in the New Yorker. Remember those names? The New Yorker, the Imperial, All of those are gone. People don't care about New York anymore. The Valiant was and the Barracuda, and NASCAR was really leaning on the Hemi from Dodge and Plymouth. And so this was, you know, the Charger of 66. I've got a good friend of mine that has a 67. I saw him coming out of Ingalls this morning by chance. That's funny. And this, he has a red two-door Charger just like the one I'm looking at right now in this magazine or this book from the 60s. We'll keep talking about 66 and some of the stuff that was out right after this incredible commercial break. Okay, I'm back. We're up to the Ford Motor Company, my personal favorite right now. And I can't say that. People say, well, Lenny, how can you stand to sell Fords after selling Chevys all those years? And I said, man, it's easy. You just switch teams and try to survive. And, you know, I've been a Ford dealer since 2005, bought the dealership from a wonderful gentleman named Don Smith, who used to work with the Anderson organization, Anderson Ford up in Kingsport. It's called Fairway Ford now, but it's not different owner. Sam Anderson was a fixture in the auto industry in Upper East Tennessee, kind of like the Loonies were. Remember the Loonies? When we came here, I think it was the Loonies had a partner. It was called Latimer Looney. That was the Chevrolet dealer in Kingsport. I don't know when they became the Subaru dealer. Of course, the big dealer in Bristol was Bill Gatton, as far as Chevrolet was concerned. Campbell Ford, I think, was the Ford dealer in Bristol. And then you go to Johnson City, and you know, one of my favorite families in the car business, the Sherwoods. Ken Sherwood, Larry Sherwood, and the father, Ed Sherwood. Very interesting story how they became the dealer. There was a dealer in, and his name escapes me, and I apologize, you are shouting it at me right now, but there was the previous dealer was murdered in the showroom in Johnson City. The Sherwoods ended up with the dealership and operated downtown, I guess, for a while, and then they moved to right beside the Westtown Mall, which now there's an Office Depot and a McAllister's Deli there. That was probably the ultimate location for a car dealership in East Tennessee. I mean, it was just right there on the corner, right beside the mall, and they used to just absolutely kill it as far as numbers were concerned. And they were our competition, but they were great competitors. You know, you can be competition for somebody and be legit and nice and honest and helpful and, you know, go to meetings and be nice to each other and stuff. There's some dealers in East Tennessee right now that, I don't know, it's just like the opposite of that, but Sherwood was wonderful. I remember up in Irwin, there was a Chevy dealer called Harry Range. I don't know if you guys remember that. Jim Rule, I think, ended up buying that Chevy store. And, of course, Irwin Motor Company, the Loves, had the Ford dealership there. And that's about, you know, when you look at, I mean, I'm just talking about Chevrolet and Ford. There's so many great dealers, you know, like the Hills in Kingsport, Mitch Walters and his group, you know, they've been around a long time, not near as long as Mr. Gatton and so forth. Mr. Gatton just sold his dealerships, and I'm not sure how that's going to all shake out. But, you know, new owners, changes. I told you that some of this was getting ready to happen, and it is. You know, you look back, let's get on our theme here of 1966. You know, Ford sold about 1.6 million Fords in 2021. In 2020, I think they did about 1.7. Ford division sold 2.2 million cars in 1966. That's just cars. That didn't count the trucks. They beat Chevrolet that year for the number one spot. They beat Chevrolet by 6,215 units. You know, you would think Chevrolet could have sneezed that many units out, but obviously they didn't. Second generation Ford Fairlane came out, and the Falcon was upgraded from a compact to a near midsize. You know, because they had the Mustang, and the Mustang was originally built on the Falcon chassis. Lee Iacocca was trying to put that car together under the without Henry II finding about it. You folks do realize Henry II, Henry Jr., or Henry the Second Ford is who I'm talking about, was not Henry's son. Henry's son was Edsel Ford, and Edsel had, I think, four children, and Henry II was his eldest. And he eventually took over the Ford Motor Company and did a really good job. Kind of crazy, kind of mean. He wasn't like that guy that was in that Ford versus Ferrari, though. He wasn't that that guy, but he was similar. Let's see. Mustang had some minor changes in 66. Nothing really outlandish. The 66 has actually outsold the 64.5 and 65s by about 50,000 units. I mean, such a successful car. 66 was the first year for the Ford Bronco, and it debuted to compete with the Jeep CJ and the International Scout. Now, you know, the Scout is no longer around, but, you know, people are starting to buy those and restore them. And if you can find one that's not completely rusted away. But see, that was the issue with all cars of that era. I mean, they all rusted. They just didn't have the technology to prevent rust anywhere. I mean, regardless of where you lived. You leave them outside, they get rained on, they're going to rust. Now, if you take a modern vehicle, leave it out in the rain, you know, 365 days a year for 10 years, it's not going to rust. Unless there's some little bit of exposed metal somewhere, but there just isn't on a lot of modern cars because of the dipping technology. Elpo primer is what they call it. Electrically charged. It's interesting. If you ever go to a plant, you'll see them go into that big vat. Lincoln didn't change much, but they again, they're all chasing larger displacement engines. This was the 60s, finding ways to squeeze out more horsepower out of engines. And, you know, racing was frowned upon by the government, but Ford was really getting back into it. It wasn't until the 70s that we started really squeezing down on horsepower because of trying to meet all the emission standards. So in the 60s, big developments as far as safety. In the 70s, big developments as far as trying to figure out how to not to spew bad stuff out the tailpipe. General Motors, Alfred P. Sloan Jr. was the former chairman whose management practices really shaped General Motors into the world's largest industrial corporation. He died in 1966 at the age of 90. GM also, you know, they had gotten in trouble with the Corvair. You know, Ralph Nader. He came out with this book called Unsafe at Any Speed, and it was basically, it was embarrassing to GM, and they just decided that they were going to investigate this nut job. Not that he was a nut job, but they thought he was, and they hired private detectives to investigate him, and GM had to admit that and found that nothing incriminating was found, and they issued a public apology for, you know, giving Ralph a hard time. The most important new GM car in 66 was when GM decided to go with a flat front floor in a luxury car that was called the Toronado. And they also, Buick launched the same thing, a Riviera, and they were front-wheel drive. It was the first front-wheel drive American production car since, now, a lot of people think it was the first American front-wheel drive car, and it wasn't. Back in the 30s, a company called Cord, C-O-R-D, had front-wheel drive cars. Let's see. Chevrolet introduced the Caprice. I remember my mom got a Caprice. She thought she had landed in Nirvana, but she had only landed in a Chevy. But she was happy. She was the wife of a Chevrolet representative, the Charleston Regional Parts and Accessories Zone or Manager. I guess I got part of that right. That was my dad's title back then. So Chevrolet was doing well. They came out. They were getting towards the end of the Corvair run. Corvette was, this was the second to the last year of the Stingray body style. You know, it's funny. 63 Corvettes, split window, not a good seller. People didn't like the split window. But now they're the most valuable, other than a 67 427 435 horsepower Corvette with the side pipes and four speeds. Those are those, and the 63 split windows are the ones. But 64s and 65s and 66s, they're not worth near as much. I mean, it's like a $20,000 to $30,000 less value for those cars. Oldsmobile, if you care about Oldsmobile, you know, they were, again, they came out with the Tornado, and they had some luxury cars. My grandfather was always a Buick guy. I think you were either a Buick guy or an Oldsmobile guy. I don't really know what the difference, but, I mean, there was some different designs. Pontiac was kind of the sporty brand for General Motors. Chevrolet, the everyday man's car. Cadillac, the rich people's car. And the Buicks, a lot of doctors drove Buicks. A lot of lawyers drove Oldsmobiles. So, you know, we still had Studebaker back then. They were making Avantis. And, you know, that's pretty much the 60s wrap up. Really, for 66, that was a very interesting model year. Well, we'll take our last break and be back here in just a second. You know, I'm sitting in my office right now, and across from me is a 1968 model Schwinn apple crate bicycle. Yes, I actually have my 1968 Schwinn apple crate bicycle in my office at Gateway Ford. And so if you come visit me, I'll show you that. Get back to my office. It has red striped tires on the rear. It has the big high-rise handlebars, a banana seat. You've got to remember those. But I'm telling you, when my dad took me into John's Cyclery on McCorkle Avenue in St. Albans, West Virginia, Route 60, I think it was called McCorkle Avenue, right across from the Chevrolet dealer called C&O Motors. But there was a bicycle shop, and when my dad let us go in there, and my bike was $85, I had half of it, and he paid the other half, and my brother got an English racer bike, you know, with a speed bike. And I got this big old heavy monster. It has a little teeny tire in the front, big fat slick in the back. It's candy apple red, stripes on the seat. I tell you what, I was the man, at least on Aleph Lane in St. Albans, West Virginia. And I just liked it so much, I just decided to keep it. So, you know, sometimes we hang on to things. We hang on to possessions. We hang on to our history, our past. And I think hanging on is not such a bad thing, do you? Well, folks, I appreciate you listening to this edition of My Car Guru. I will be back tomorrow with another edition. We'll see you then.